Mini episode 1920 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1920. You have with you here today FDH Lounge original dignitaries, Rick Morris, Chris Galloway, Jason Jones, and I was totaling this up before. 2012, I believe, is the first year that we convened to do our NFL draft preview, the three of us together. So the 15th year since then of the three of us getting together to break down the forthcoming NFL draft. And this is obviously a highlight of the calendar from year to year. And I always like to peg, now that we're into the 1900s for the mini episodes, if I can ever peg anything to a piece of history here. And for example, in mini episode 1919 with Russ Cohen previewing the Stanley Cup playoffs, I equated the Red Wings stretch down the end of the season here to the Spanish flu outbreak. So with this one here, with 2020 heralding what would be the incoming Warren Harding administration here, I would like to say that there are a number of teams that we will be talking about here whose draft history, Chris, I would say compares unfavorably to even the Teapot Dome scandal, I think.
It was a really obscure reference.
But one I knew you would appreciate.
Yes, but this is going to be an interesting draft for a lot of teams at the top of this draft that are in need of some blue chip talent. And after about five or six guys, there's going to be a dearth of that. And so I think this is going to be a real test for a bunch of front offices this year across the league in terms of how they manage this draft, round by round. And I think that this is going to be the kind of draft that's going to be about drafting quality depth, guys that you can develop. And so I would say to those who are ready to stick a grade on a draft immediately as soon as it's done, as we usually caution, not so fast, my friend, to quote Lee Corso, because I think some of these folks are not going to show their true abilities for two or three years. And I'm thinking of a guy like left tackle out of Georgia, Monroe Feeling. I just think that he's a guy that's going to need a couple more years and then can potentially be that perennial Pro Bowl left tackle.
That's actually the guy I have going to the Browns in the mock draft. So with that being said, Jason, your thoughts on this here? It's a thing where you have a number of teams in the draft here who desperately wish that this wasn't a one quarterback draft, so to speak here. So, yeah, I know that there are some embittered fans out there for the Jets and the Cardinals and everything like that, that they're having to go in a direction that they might not necessarily like to have to go in, because essentially for the most part, you're talking defensive studs in that position there, unless you want to go for a top flight wide receiver or running back, but or potentially offensive tackle. But even then, it would just, from a fan perspective, you're like, can't we get a quarterback here? The answer is no. It's a one quarterback draft. Sorry. So it's not quite, I think, like the 2024 NBA draft, where I remember hearing like, oh, the first time ever Atlanta's got the number one pick, and Atlanta's got to be sitting there going, gee, thanks. Not quite sure who we'll take with our pick here now that we got the draft in this year. But there may be perhaps some tinges of similarity, I think, Jason, when you're looking at this here in terms of teams in that spot. Unlike the Hawks in that pick, there are players worthy of the spot. It just may or may not be what the franchise and the fan bases would most prioritize under the circumstances.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And for me personally, I'm actually happy it's going this way, but that's a story for another day. There's a lot to like here, but to your point, you can't force anything, and this isn't one of those drafts where, like, if you look at quarterback, Fernando Mendoza is going to go one, and it's all there is to it. I don't think there's another franchise quarterback in this draft.
Right.
And that's just one position. There are other positions where it's just, you just don't want to force it. You can't put a square peg in a round hole with this. But that, to Chris's point, the key here is there's starters and great depth pieces to get here. There are developmental pieces. Arguably my favorite prospect. I say favorite, not best. Mm-hmm. Like, I would definitely not recommend anyone take him in the first round. But this is one of those guys that, God, if you could give him a year or two, he could be a different player. And it has to do with competition level and a bunch of little things he's got to get coached up on. But that's what you're looking for. There's very few prospects in this draft that you look at and go, yep, no questions, no notes. You mentioned tackles. Like, there could be six tackles in the first round, and I don't think two of them are day one starters at left tackle. You have questions about, can this guy convert? Is he better here or there? Fanoe is tried out at center. Sorry, but I'm not taking a left tackle in the top 10 or even 15 if he's a potential candidate to be a guard or a center. Yeah. So there's a lot of navigating you got to do with this one. And I think the problem that a lot of teams are going to face is, are you in love with one guy that you're in the position to reach for, or do you kind of stick to the board and do the due diligence and get ready to coach these guys?
Now, Jason, the player that you like who shouldn't necessarily go in round one, is this a thing where, do we want to reward people at the end of the show? Like, stick around for the end of the show when Jason will tell them, or do you want to disclose now?
Either way, it's fine.
Okay, go ahead then. Yeah, okay. Who is it?
Ted Hurst Jr., wide receiver from Georgia State.
Okay.
And there's a bias here because when I see him, okay, first issue is it's Georgia State.
Okay, he's wrong. He's
going to pop off the screen because it's Georgia State.
Sure.
But then when you watch, especially the deeper stuff, they did a lot of screen work and shallow stuff with him. But if you stick around and watch the tape till they go deep to him, I this feels like a hot take, but in my heart, I don't think it is. I think in 2 years, he could be Josh Gordon without the drama.
Wow. Well, I mean.
Now, he doesn't have that level of speed. But when you see him get past the guy, he pulls away like Gordon did. And he's shorthanded, and he's 6'3", and all that jazz. But that's a great example of a guy that, like, yeah, he could go late second, third round, fourth round at the latest. But he's not going to be the guy in 2026 that he's going to be in 2028.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the idea you have to look at with a lot of these guys.
A real size-speed combo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think about him, Chris?
He's intriguing. He's an intriguing prospect. I mean, he has the size and the speed. He's a guy that's a great example because that's a guy you've got to develop. You've mm-hmm. got to get him with your coaches. You've got to get him in the right system. He's got to get himself in the playbook. I mean, it is the guy. He's a guy that's like year one, he'll get you a few hundred yards, he'll show some flashes, he'll drop some balls. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to be ready to start. Year two, you'll get half a season worth of some pretty good. And then he's the kind of guy I think that's like a year three guy, but that patience could pay off. Right. I mean, to Jason's point.
Yeah. I think he's an investment that's very intriguing. And that's the whole thing. That's the key word with a lot of players like that we're going to be talking about today would be investment, because it's going to be something where you're going to have to, you know, take them at a spot where you're not overdrafting them, and then really, really be able to place the premium that you need to in terms of player development. Now, In terms of players that Jason likes and doesn't like as much, all this and much, much more can be found in Pro Football Draftology 2026. By the time this show is up, I would say probably available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com and powered by Jason's power or his player ratings at the different position. This is one where, again, Jason's expertise really kind of takes the lead in this particular guide here, his top 100 overall, et cetera, et cetera. And a list of players that Jason really likes that he elaborates on and those that he has concerns with. That's the way that we phrased it. There he has some concerns about some of them. Now, somebody that you did not place on the concerns list, but I know that you are not a complete subscriber to the consensus that I am. I am a slavish believer in the consensus of Mendoza, franchise quarterback. I said so the night of the Illinois game back in October. I went on Twitter and I said, QB1 next year. I don't want to hear about anybody else, QB1. So I was in early on that guy. And you know how I am when I'm in early on somebody. I am the original bitter clinger when I'm in early. So I feel the way that I feel about it. I know that you are at least slightly more lukewarm. I was relieved to see that he didn't make your players I have concerns about list. But yeah, as far as you have more nuanced thoughts about Fernando Mendoza than I do. So I'd be interested in hearing them. And then, of course, Chris's reaction to that.
I mean, I don't have issues with Mendoza. I think Mendoza is one of those guys that has what you're looking for in size, measurables, all that stuff. I mean, if we want to nitpick, like he rarely goes through and gets to a third or fourth progression. I think he could do more with his legs, and we saw that in the playoff. I think he has certain intangibles. I think the thing with Mendoza is some people, this is going to sound unfair. People look at Mendoza and they'll say, yeah, but he's not Joe Burrow. Well, Joe Burrow's an engaging guy and whatever.
Yeah.
Like, is he getting criticized because he's a nerd? And I don't think teams care about that. So if you're
they might be relieved.
At, what's that?
They might be relieved given the alternatives. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, the guy
nerds are harmless.
The guy has one social media account, and while none of this matters in the world of football, if you're a GM, if you're a coach and you like everything about him, and then you know you've got the team of people that are gonna dig on him and they're like, yeah, we can't find anything, this guy does nothing but play football, like that's not a bad thing. Now, do I think that he's gonna be, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer when it's all said and done? I'm a little hesitant on that. I think he's going to be a very good franchise quarterback. Could be one of these guys that's somewhere between 5 and 10 in the league at some point. But I don't look at him as the guy that everyone's going to fight over. Like the Fernando Mendoza thing now is not what Arch Manning will be if Arch Manning is what everyone wants him to be when he comes out. So I think that there's a little bit of he's not sexy enough, but I think that's what makes him work. Is he's just a good quarterback, but he has the measurables, the intangibles, the ability to be great. We just have to see if that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean,
but
what I
have
like
no concerns about him.
I think he can do everything at a relatively high level. I mean, he's got a great arm talent, 6'5", but he's not a statue. He can move. He's not immobile. Before I go to Chris, quick follow-up question, because it's a matter of, so all these guys, no matter how great they are, they're pieces of clay when they enter the league. This guy goes into a system. You got Kubiak. You got Brady there. How much more do you like him with that being the case?
Oh, love it.
Okay.
I don't think it takes a great sports mind or investigative journalist to look at this whole situation and go, okay, there's only one possible franchise quarterback in this draft class. And the team that has the number one pick just so happens to be somewhat run, if little bits at a time, by Tom Brady. Yeah, this is perfect.
Yeah.
So you can absolutely see why Tom Brady would love this kid.
Yeah.
So it totally works.
And the whole Kubiak family, really. I mean, name a random Kubiak, and I would trust him with Fernando Mendoza.
Yeah, and if Kubiak's system in the Raiders is what Kubiak systems are,
yeah,
then yeah, like it could be tailor-made, and we could be talking about him in a conversation with other names. I think the problem people have is you don't look at him and think Jalen Daniels, right?
Sure.
Like he's not Patrick Mahomes or what. Like he's not going to do a whole lot of crazy arm angle stuff, but he probably could if he had to. He's not going to run around and scramble like crazy. And if he is, he's doing it to get somewhere. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I like it. I think it's going to work great. Now I have concerns about the rest of the Raiders roster, but I think that's
obviously.
Solid.
Yeah. But having probably one of the two or three best tight ends in the league on day one, that's going to help him. That's going to be the safety blanket that you're looking for. And for anybody questioning why he's not going to the draft, like, I don't know, folks, would you go to Pittsburgh if you didn't have to? So, I mean, that's, you know, I'm not going to fault him for that. I'm not going to slam him for that one there,
Rick, you know. On that point, people mm-hmm. do need to pump the brakes a little bit about this. And if okay. they were to go digging mm-hmm. and actually pull them, this makes perfect sense. Post COVID.
Yeah.
The numbers have gone down.
Yeah.
Guys are just more content to stay home. By the way, I don't know if you guys knew this. And I still need to know, I need to find an answer because we still can't find an answer. You know what's happening right about the time Fernando Mendoza's name is going to be called?
What?
The Indiana spring game.
They're playing Thursday night?
They're playing Thursday night at 8 p.m. The draft, in practicality, probably starts at 8 p.m.
That's freaking weird.
That is the most Cignetti thing I could have even conceived.
Even for Kurt Cignetti, that's a weird one. So that I don't know what to say about that. So, okay. So Chris, you've had a chance to absorb all of this from me and Jason here. Your thoughts on Mendoza in Las Vegas. I want to hear this.
There to take in. I like the player. I like the intangibles. I like the intelligence ear to ear. I've said it, you know, so many years again and again, the most important muscle the playing quarterback is the brain. You know, he's a smart kid, classified as a nerd, whatever you want to call him. He, you know, he's all about football all the time. And that's a great quality that you want as your franchise quarterback. You know, obviously, I think even though he's a little different in that regard, he's still obviously a good leader. I mean, his teammates at Indiana, I mean, we all know at the end of the day, if you're producing, they'll, you know, guys in the locker room will follow anybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, you know, these kids are different than we are as Gen Xers, right? I mean, it's all very different for how they are personality-wise and what motivates them and whatnot. So I think he's a good fit. I think you've got a great coach to pair him with. You know, we've said it a million times. I mean, you know, half the game is who drafts you and how many times we've wondered about someone whose career never took off the way it should have because they didn't end up with the right system. They didn't, you know, they didn't end up with the right coaching staff. He gets a great, an offensive-minded, quarterback-minded head coach, a quasi-GM in Tom Brady. You know, he gets Kirk Cousins there to tutor yes. him, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, if Kirk has got to even start the first few weeks, let the kid get ready. Fine. Right. But he's in the room with him. I mean, think about that. They are, I mean, down to getting the best center in the game in yes. the free agency to call mm-hmm. the line. So he doesn't have to worry about it as a rookie. The Raiders are actually doing everything correctly to set this kid up for success. Coach, front office, you know, support, Pro Bowl center. I mean, and you pointed out tight ends. They are set, and they got a running back, right? So
yeah.
they are setting he'll be better. Him up as best they can to this first year to get his feet wet, get comfortable with the game as the season goes on, you know, the quarterback room, you name it. Honestly, you got to feel great about drafting a kid that goes to a situation where that's what they're trying to do. And it's obviously by design. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not pairing a rookie quarterback with a defensive head coach. Mm-hmm. You know, with a washed up center, with a, you know, no tight end, no running back, you know, whatever. They're setting the table for success. And if you're a Mendoza fan or you're a Raiders fan, that's all you can ask for. It's the best situation that kid could ask for. Certainly totally better than going to, say, the Cardinals, you know, or
yeah,
something. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he's going the Jets, right? He's going to a system that's they're laying it all out for him. So I feel great about the pick for the Raiders if you're a Raiders fan. Yeah, I agree. I mean, from a raw talent standpoint, is he Daniels? Is he whatnot? I'll say this. He's less likely to get hurt the way Daniels is more likely to get hurt, which means he's got a higher floor than a lot of guys. Let's see if Daniels can stay healthy, right?
Oh, yeah. The most important part of ability is availability.
Well, right. And I think that Mendoza, I mean, I think he's a guy, he's big and he's sturdy. So he's, you know, he's not been known as injury prone. We've seen him get, you know, beat up pretty good and keep slinging it. So I think to me that gives him a nice high floor. Okay. So to Jason's point, 2 or 3 years from now, you know, is he a guy that's, you know, 9th, 10th best quarterback in the league? Probably, because I think he's got all the skill sets that you actually need to be succeed in a modern NFL. He can use his feet. He doesn't look for that as his first option. He's accurate with the football. He clearly has the intangible intelligence elements in terms of understanding an offense and knowing how to execute what his coaches want. You know, I think it's setting up for success.
Yeah,
there is a funny elephant in the room here too, by the way.
What is it?
Everybody in the last couple years got real enamored with the reclamation project quarterback. Sam Darnold being the poster child for that.
Yep.
This is the inverse of what happened to Darnold.
It is. What if Darnold went to a system like this?
Right, but what I mean is you didn't have the Pro Bowl center, you didn't have Tom Brady there, you didn't have, you know, the arguably the best tight end in the league. They didn't have anything set up for Darnold. And while it's not reinventing math or anything, we could look back in a few years, and if Mendoza is what we think he's going to be, and he takes the journey we think he's going to take, this could be one of those things where people go, well, if there's one guy and we're in position to get him, let's set some stuff up before we get him. You could also make the argument, you know, like a Tim Couch type.
Well, yeah.
Where you put him on a team that had literally nothing else.
Well,
and it didn't end well.
In terms of what you're saying, this takes me to discussions that I've had with FDA Troops analyst Ben Chu when we're looking at this stuff on the NBA side. And the whole notion that in recent years, because of teams like Denver and Miami and San Antonio, and yes, the Cleveland Cavaliers, that player development is now becoming a hip thing here. And let's get into that. And let's try to build out the whole rotation, not just for the first time ever, all 30 teams in the league have a G League affiliate. And I'm sitting here like, you want a cookie? Like it's the mid 2020s. And we're like, hey, maybe we should take player development really seriously. Hey, that might be somewhat of a cheat code to help rise above our present circumstances. So I hear what you're saying, and I get that. But like the notion of like the teams would want to do everything they could to try and provide a cocoon for a star quarterback. Why are we going to look at this like, hey, Las Vegas reinvented the wheel? I don't think we should give them that much credit. But you're right, though, Jason. You're right. But it's pathetic that we're sitting here like Las Vegas is doing it right. Why the hell wasn't anybody else? How is this not something that should be patently obvious, Jason? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's the fear of this, is that at some point Mendoza will look really good. And people, typically fans in these social media spaces, will literally say, look what the Raiders did. The Raiders reinvented how to do it. And we're going to sit back and go, No, they just, for the longest times, teams just flew by the seat of their pants and hoped for the best. And as you made a basketball reference, the immediate thought I had was the early 2000s when high school kids could still make the jump. Yet, what were you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a money grab.
And then, you know, if we look at some of the bad quarterbacks that we think of as being bad, and you look back at, yeah, this is something that should have been figured out 2 decades ago at minimum. So I agree with you. Like, yeah, it's very Chris Rock, would you want a cookie?
Yeah.
It's not that, but I'm sure fans will find a way to paint it that way.
Well, exactly. Chris, what is it with this bar of expectations where we're supposed to reward teams for showing basic competence in doing something like this?
Talking about rewards, I think it's just pointing out that the Raiders, you know, are doing it correctly. I mean,
why doesn't everybody else?
And you've heard me. Well, I'm going to tell you why, because you've heard me pound the desk for years about this, which is, okay, here, hey, everybody out on the internet, let's zoom in. I'm going to give you a little secret. It's not that fucking hard. Football yes. guys love to think that only I can do football because I'm a football guy. I play football. Right? But guys like Sean McVay, and you know, whether it's you know Kubiak or all these others, have shown that you don't have to play football. Only I know how to do anything with a team. The reality is this isn't hard. It's talent development. Companies do it all the time. Different industries do it all the time. Entertainment does it all the time. I don't know. You know, football guys for too long have been insulated in terms of, well, only we can do this. This is some, boy, there's some magic in what we do here. And only you know, we, it almost has that sort of like, you know, anti-Moneyball feel, like those scenes from Moneyball, like, you know, what are you doing, Billy? Only we, you know, you've got all this experience, us scouts, we know what we're doing, you know? And I, for years I've watched football teams just sheer incompetence, and it's obvious. Like, it doesn't mean that anyone's going to ever bat 1,000 or you're not going to make draft picks that don't work out, right? But a great example I would give is that I have said this for like 5 or 6 years. I thought the Browns wide receivers coaches were a flipping joke for years, right? Yep. Chad O'Shea and the tranny or whoever the hell they had that's an assistant was going on there. They sucked. Everybody knew they sucked, and then no one could figure out why can't the Browns develop a wide receiver? Oh, I don't know, because we have someone who's clearly incompetent, okay? And, oh, by the way, they're busy running a social experiment on the coaching staff. And rather than getting competency to develop your wide receivers, right? Now we have a new coaching staff, new wide receiver coaches. That is an example where I'm interested to see how it looks in a year or two with these folks. But I've, you know, you can see it left and right in the way teams operate. They just, they sometimes just don't, you know, they don't use their head, you know. No. If I was drafting, and I'm not a football guy, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm drafting a quarterback, number one, I know I'm going to be, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe you have Tom Brady in or not, but I'm going to go get a quarterback friendly, offense oriented coach who has shown that he can develop and coach a quarterback, right?
Yep.
Step one, I'm going to go find that guy. Step two, you know, I'm going to go find an experienced Pro Bowl level center. I'm going to look for, you know, a tight end or any other help that I can get. I would also be looking for more offensive linemen to protect my investment. Mm-hmm. Rocket science, you know? I mean, like, I just – sometimes I think there it's such a good old boy insulated system in the NFL, and that's why you see so many retread coaches again and again, is that they have this belief that only we can do this, only we understand how to do it, and that's nonsense. What you need in this in the NFL is more disruption, right? That you've seen in other industries. And you know, you heard me talk about how the day comes when they can actually measure a quarterback's the microseconds that takes them to process. They when someone finally figures out that the test that they can plug in one of these guys into the computer, they'll find their quarterback of the future, because it's all about processing speed. You know, we don't hear about the Wonderlic anymore.
No.
And how long did we embrace that thing?
No, we got the ice cream test this year. You hear about that? Yeah.
I don't know if I did or not.
I didn't hear about this. What's the ice cream test?
I forgot what team he's with, but he's with an NFL team. I'll say maybe the Vikings or something. And when he interviews a quarterback prospect, he asks them, what's your favorite ice cream flavor? And if they hesitate at all, he moves on. So, like, it doesn't matter what the answer is. Like, you should just know what your favorite is and fire it off. And his point was, if you have to sit there and think about what your favorite ice cream flavor is, what are you going to do, you know, when it's the AFC championship game or the NFC championship game and it's on the line and all these different things are happening. So they're still, to your point, Chris, they're still trying to measure how fast you process. Yeah. They're just finding really weird non-scientific ways to do it.
An agonizer like me would get exposed quickly. Like, well, I like Rocky Road, but, you know, there's Choco Taco, too. Can't sleep on Choco Taco.
You know what,
but,
Rick, you know what? Yeah. I view that as going through your progressions. What are you talking about?
Progressions? That's an incredible retort. Yeah, it's a strength of mine. The next time somebody gets me for waffling on stuff, I'll just say I'm going through my progressions.
And obviously, I would never have ever been a football NFL prospect. But if put in that position, before he even stopped the question, I said, first of all, please understand, very, very important food texture. So I'm factoring a whole bunch of stuff you're not even thinking about before we even play this game.
Yeah. Exactly. And by the way, if you say Neapolitan, do they judge you for being indecisive? Because that's three flavors. So, you know, he can't even pick out the flavor. It depends on how much they're nitpicking it, I suppose. But by the way, for what Chris said, and Chris, I agree everything with his brilliant monologue there. And I'm sure he's going to be like, you got this from what I said. But when he mentioned Sean McVay there, just a side note that – based on what's come out recently here as far as coaching headlines and stuff like that, remember that the Rams made it to Championship Sunday. And, of course, the Patriots made the Super Bowl. We were this close potentially. That was a four-point NFC Championship game, the real Super Bowl, as I think we all know. But we were, like, this close to potentially there being a Super Bowl media press conference here with the coaches.
Don't do it. Just let it be.
No Eskimo Brother reference. Okay. I will not make the Eskimo Brother reference. Okay. I love how Chris saw that coming a million miles away.
Yeah, I knew the minute you started, I went, oh boy.
He saw the hanging curve coming his way.
I think I've known you too long. So I think that I could sniff that out, from 100 miles away.
I was going to say, we've been doing this too long to not know when Rick is setting up a reference.
Yes. Indeed I was. And all right. So I will pivot to a reference of, again, a really, really elite group of players, I think, that you were looking at in the top 10 as far as and they're not going to fully populate the top 10. There will be some other guys in here. There may be some of these guys slipping out of there for some reason. But again, as far as what this draft has a chance to most be remembered by, I mean, if we're looking at it positionally, edge rushers, linebackers, they look like they're pretty much, you know, the headliners of this draft here. Another really strong wide receiver crop and, you know, some strength at offensive tackle and cornerback. But essentially, the players at the very top of the draft, the player who is expected potentially to go second, and I know that FDH Lounge dignitary Russ Cohen is irate about this because he says – whatever edge rusher we take will just be another Vernon Golston. But David Bailey from Texas Tech, he doesn't want him to take an edge rusher because jet edge rushers always fail. And I'm like, Russ, the answer is to develop them better, not to, you know, not to not take them. You need one. So David Bailey, the great edge rusher there, you're looking at a circumstance where, I mean, he's pretty much neck and neck with a guy who is part of a historic draft class here with what Ohio State is going to have in the top 10. Arvel Reese could be going. He's pretty interchangeable on a lot of the boards with Bailey there. But you've got a couple of the other Ohio State guys as well. The outstanding linebacker, Sonny Styles, the safety, who a lot of people are saying is the best safety in the last couple of years. I think, Jason, you said probably the best one since, I think, like 22, which, what a mouthful that is. I don't necessarily disagree with you about Caleb Downs and what he can do. But when you consider that Nick Emmanuari came out last year and was a glue guy on the Super Bowl winning defense from the jump. And again, Chris has heard me talk about this a lot over a period of time on the show. I use the term force multiplier, that military adjacent term, to talk about guys who can help make guys around them better. We're talking about a number of players here who are capable of doing that, but it seems like safeties can be sort of uniquely suited to do that. And now with the Giants making the move at 10, you and I were texting about this last night. It's very possible that John Harbaugh is looking there at possibly Downs being there at 10 if he doesn't take him at 5, and saying, I have a chance to get my Kyle Hamilton in this situation.
Yeah, I don't mean to slight Emmanuari, but there's an Emmanuari in here, and it's not Downs. The reason I have said that, I did say that he's the best since you just said his name,
kid. Kyle Hamilton.
Okay. Because in both cases, those are a do all of it safety. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's literally almost nothing you can't do with that. Emmanuari and McNeil Warren,
mm-hmm,
are both the same archetype, essentially. They're both very long, rangy. They have specific things they're great at, and if whoever gets McNeil Warren does the same thing, I think a lot of us think that they'll have similar success. But there's still stuff that Emmanuari I'm not asking to do. And that's why I think it's the best since Hamilton.
That and is incredible.
I've even heard people compare him to like Polamalu, which I think is a bit of a stretch, but we'll see.
That's another player in that mold, basically. And when we're talking about the top end players here in the first round, in the top 10, most likely, and all of these are candidates for the top five. Of course, Jeremiah Love, the running back at Notre Dame, that a lot of people are saying is the best running back in a couple of years, probably since Bijan Robinson, and Carnell Tate, wide receiver from Ohio State, who headlines what I think is a pretty strong class there. So, Chris, out of the guys we were just talking about, or the guys that I just mentioned now, your thoughts on what this is basically the core of the draft, I think, that we're going to remember this by one way or another, and probably in a positive sense, because I think a lot of these guys are going to become multi-time Pro Bowl players.
Sorry about that. I was on mute.
Okay.
Sorry. My faux pas. No, I was saying, I think that all the Ohio State guys,
mm-hmm,
are actually going to prove to be just that, whether it's Reese, Styles, Downs, Tate. I think those guys are all going to be Pro Bowlers. I like them all. I don't know what the Jets will do at number two. They might go Arvell Reese and not Bailey.
Russ would be happier with that.
Well, I mean, that's a coin flip, really. I mean, it really is. They're both extremely athletic guys with that quick twitch, explosive, you know, the physical traits. I, having watched both guys, I don't know that you go wrong with either one, to be honest with you.
That's the beauty of the first round, the top 10.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why, and I guess that's the point, right? That's why they're both up there. I think they're both, of what blue chippers there are, they're in there. A guy like Jeremiah Love is another guy that's the best offensive talent on the board.
Mm-hmm.
But where does he fall to, right? This comes back to, do people go and draft best guy, or are they drafting for need, right? You know, do the Giants take Love and pair him with Scataboo? And if they don't, I think the Cardinals almost assuredly have to go tackle, and probably the kid from Miami.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so from an order standpoint, it's like, okay, like you know, whether it's Bailey or Reese, I think those guys probably go Jets, Titans, no matter what. So just flip them. It doesn't really matter. And so the draft really, in my mind, starts with the Giants at five, which is why their trade to grab 10 is really interesting. You know, what is John Harbaugh, you know, what is he looking for? Does he go offense and then come back with, you know, Downs at 10, who's probably still on the board at that point? Because I think a team like Kansas City might go, you know, Jordan Tyson or somebody like that. They might be willing to roll the dice on a guy who's obviously talented with injury concerns. So I mean, again, I think, you know, the top is all about, you know, is it need or best guy on the board? You know, what is your philosophy?
Talented, but with injury concerns. Kansas City saying he could be our Hollywood Brown. Wait, what?
He's got a lot more skill than Hollywood Brown.
I'm just making the obvious joke that you left open when you said that, but because yeah. Kansas City is.
There's a great example of a player who's got all the skills, all the ability, and your only thing is you're just worried about, you know, will you have him on the field?
Absolutely, yes. And one more player that I didn't mention who probably belongs in that top tier, Reuben Bain Jr. There have been some questions about as far as, like, I guess, like his arms. We get these questions that come up, these new questions now. I don't know if he's got long enough arms. I haven't really heard that one too much in past years about top prospects, but they're saying it about him. Some other questions about vehicular type stuff, which I'm still unclear as to what happened or didn't happen with that. It doesn't necessarily appear to be a matter that is concerning teams very much. But I will say, and I want to follow up with you, Chris, on this vis-a-vis analytics and where I'm very, very, very critical when it becomes so dogmatic as far as we have these rules now of, like, we don't overdraft running backs or safeties or linebackers. But you look at guys like Downs and Styles and Love, and it's a thing where you have to look at it and say, even if analytics will tell you that these guys are generally overpriced in different areas here, you cannot be so blind as to say, even if you believe that, there are exceptions to every rule. And this draft happens to have exceptions at all three positions here. Like, never take a guy that high. You don't say that when you're talking about these three guys, Chris.
Hate hard and fast rules like that. I think it's really stupid. You want good football players at every level on your roster, right? In terms of, you know, secondary, middle of the defense, defensive line, offensive line, you know, backfield, wide receiver. You got to have that. You're always looking for that Pro Bowl playmaker, that guy that leaves it out there. And again, this is where teams have got to get better about, you know, the athletic testing at the combine versus what you're seeing on tape. Every year there's guys that go up because of testing, and there's guys that go down because maybe they didn't test as great as you hoped. And then, but you watch the tape and you're like, you know, you have to start saying, my eyes aren't lying to me. And I think a guy that, you know, maybe didn't test as great or barely tested at all, you know, like Tate, it wasn't blazing fast, right? But we've all watched him run routes. We've watched him get open. You know, our eyeballs aren't lying to us. I'll take a little bit of an exception with Jason's comment about, you know, I don't draft a guy to, you know, to become a guard or a center. I think a guy like Finneau out of Utah is a great example of athletic. And then, and again, the tape jumps off. When they needed a yard, they ran behind him. He's played left tackle. He's played right tackle. He's excelled at both. They say he can play inside. They say he's smart enough to play center. You know, I get it. I agree with the concept of this, except this is where I'll differ. There is a safety net to drafting a guy like Finneau and saying, we think he can be our left tackle and we are going to try to make it work at left tackle. And again, back to that development. But there is a bit of a safety net knowing that And if it doesn't quite work out, we can kick him inside. And we don't, it doesn't become a waste of a pick. We still have a starting player who's pretty damn good. And a great example of that is a guy like, you know, Betonio at Nevada, right? Here's a guy that played left tackle at Nevada. And everybody was like, he can't, you know, he's going to be a guard. He's going to be a guard. And they kicked him inside right from day one. And then every now and then he had the spot start. A few times he spot started after Joe Thomas, if you recall, right after that at left tackle. And he wasn't that bad, actually. Mm-hmm. But again, guys like that, like a guy like Fanot that can play multiple positions, gives you some flexibility if you've got to juggle your line. So I think there is actually the opposite. There is actually some potential extra value there in terms of, you know, that safety net of making a pick and going, all right, if he doesn't end up being a great left tackle, but we end up with a Pro Bowl center, was it a bad pick? No. So, you know, I kind of like him as the Browns pick at six. It's where I'm leaning right now because I think they, despite the need for a lot of offensive talent, they have got to shore up that offensive line with more guys that can protect the quarterback, whether it's going to be a guy like Sanders or drafting somebody next year.
That is a very excellent point there. Jason, want to get your follow-up thoughts on that, as well as your general thoughts about these kind of rules of thumb and what analytics is saying these days about positions that are like, oh, I never take a guy this high, and about how there are obviously exceptions to every rule.
Yeah, just as a default position, I don't subscribe to the idea that there's a set of rules that you cannot deviate from.
Right.
So on that end, I'll agree with what Chris is saying. However, the value sense of what is worth what is kind of been a constant. Now, this draft will illustrate how you have to kind of, you know, come and go with that and zig and zag as you see fit based on the situation. I'm hesitant to go into the details on the Utah tackles because I think I'm going to be in a singular minority on this. But we can get into that. But as the rules go, you know, you remember the old Matthew Berry story I'm sure we both love to tell?
Yes.
Where we went in the studio and I just went off on this idea that he said, like, you can't draft wide receivers. I mean, we're talking fantasy football, but you can't draft
rookie
wide receivers. You can't take this guy too high or that guy too high. And we went scorched earth on it because he had said you can't start Adrian Peterson. He's a rookie, and he's going up against the fifth-ranked Charger defense. And we said, no, start him. Absolutely. Are you crazy?
You don't ever sit him. Yeah, he went for 275.
He broke the single game record that day.
Maybe more than 275, I guess. Yeah, I remember that.
So I guess my point is you have to be able to navigate it, right?
Yeah.
And I think this draft's going to show that a lot because, to the point, I'm going to butcher his name, Ione?
Yeah.
Vega Ione from Penn State.
Yes.
That is a guy that you could look at as being like a Hutchinson or the kid that they have in Indianapolis now that was like the fifth pick overall. And you go, that's a guard, but that's a transcendent guard. That's a guard that's a Pro Bowler for 15 years. Now, if that's what someone thinks about Fano, then yeah, go for it. I have a problem with, I'll just throw it out. I have a problem with any offensive tackle, if that's what we're viewing them as, that is over 6'6 and over 360 pounds, right? So while I think that Cleveland actually likes Caleb Proctor, it makes me nervous. Now, the flip side of that is what the Utah thing is. They are 6'6 and they're barely 300. So they're not heavy enough to play tackle, and they're extremely tall to play center. I mean, they could play guard, but I just have questions about the Utah tackles. I think they look good in college. I think when they play together, it works. I'm just not sure that two guys at 6'6", 307, and 309 are something I'm ready to invest a top 10 pick in. Now, that being said, I wasn't at the workouts. I didn't see him get put through the ringer. So there's factors here that could be in play that would make my take on it seem less than ideal. But just in general. Now, circling back around, I did want to say something about Tate. And this applies to the rules thing. We have a really bad tendency, and when I say we, I don't mean the three of us. I mean people that talk about the draft at a large scale. They have a tendency to try to compare people to other people, and because of that, it dictates something negative typically. And the biggest thing I've heard about Tate is he's not even the best wide receiver on his team. Miss me with that completely. Right.
Of course.
Are you kidding me? Because I'm going to say something now that the three of us are going to have a field day with next year. I'm almost ready to say, like, declaratively, not in the conversation, Jeremiah Smith might be the greatest wide receiver prospect we've ever seen.
It's possible.
If that's the case, what Jeremiah Smith is has nothing to do with Tate. Nothing whatsoever. And when we go back to the idea of watching him, this is what I would say to, I don't know, Browns fans or Commanders fans or Dallas fans or whoever you think wants to get Tate. He does everything you want him to do to be a productive wide receiver. Even as a one, he does all of it. And here's the fun factoid that no one's talking about that I've seen. I hope other people are talking about it because it's obvious. Of the top 10 leading receivers in the NFL last year, how many of them ran 4.4, 4.3, 4.2? One of them.
Wow.
It was Ja'Marr Chase.
Okay.
Outside of that, JSN, 4.5 guy. Maybe even a 4.6 guy. Puka Nacua, 4.5 guy. Mm-hmm. As you go down the list, of those 10, if you take Ja'Marr Chase out, not one of them had combine speed. And yet, they're incredible. Now, let's be fair. Justin Jefferson did make the list, and a couple other guys that do have great speed did make the list. But that's my point, is that if you ask these teams, would you have liked to have JSN last year? All of them going to say yes. And when you put on the tape, he runs exquisite routes. His body control is like Chris Carter-like.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a 50-50 ball with Tate. That's like an 80-20, 70-30 ball.
Right.
Like, if you're looking for a receiver, and here's the fun part, when we talk about receiver in the first round, I only love three in the first round because I got a lot of guys I like in the second round. When you look at it, Tate doesn't have elite speed. Okay. Lemon might be a phenomenal slot, but I don't trust him to run X routes. And then you got Jordan Tyson's got the whole injury thing. Now, if he had no injury concerns at all, Jordan Tyson's probably the top receiver in this draft class. But when you look at it, that's the thing with this draft, is you got to figure out, like they said in draft day, you got to see all the things and decide if you can live with that. I, as a fan or I, as a football watcher, I can absolutely live with Carnell Tate running in the 4.5s. Does not affect my evaluation one bit because he gets open, he gets separation, he wins.
Yep.
And at 6'3" or whatever, what are we talking about?
Right.
So again, with the rules, like you don't have, and we've been talking about this for years now. The NFL is not looking at a prototype that's like 6'3" plus, 220 plus, runs a sub 4.440. That's not the only option at wide receiver one. And we can take it even further. And the game's evolved a little bit where the shifty guys and the possession guys actually do more now. Mm-hmm. So I hate the rules. I'll admit that I probably do have a bias when it comes to offensive line, just because we have been ingrained in this idea that you only take a Joe Thomas in the top five.
Right.
You only take you know, a Trent Williams in the top 10. You just don't do it. But again, to the point, that comes back to the rules are dumb.
Well, yes. And by the way, about Tate, and again, it is a real mouth breather kind of a thing there. Like, oh, well, because he's already the best on his team. The only nuanced thing that it's fair to say is you don't get to see tape on him, aside from the handful of formations where Smith isn't out there, where he's the one on the field and where he's being treated that way. That's fair. We don't have enough film on him in that specific circumstance. Okay, I'll hear that argument. I don't think it matters very much when you look at the whole body of work and everything that he does. But yeah, no, I think you raised some very, very excellent points here. So,
hey, Rick, just to throw one more thing in there.
Yeah.
Everybody, we don't have to look at it like Jeremiah Smith, Marvin Harrison.
Right.
We have JSNs, we have Olaves, we have the kid in
Garrett Wilson. Yeah.
Garrett Wilson. Like, we have guys that have come through that program under Hartline.
Michael Thomas. Wait, what?
that you look at it like that's not the number one. Then they get to the league, and inside of a year or two, you're like, oh, yeah, he's better than we thought. Yeah, because the system works.
It does. Yeah. I mean, we'll have to see in years to come. We'll have to see what happens to that pipeline now that the Hartline's gone down to the old Sunshine State. So, but as far as it goes here, taking an overall look here at anything that we haven't hit, any players that you think are noteworthy that we haven't gotten to, whether overrated, underrated, whatever the thoughts may be. Chris, I'll start with you here. Any thoughts you have that we have not yet circled to vis-a-vis the 2026 NFL draft?
This, I mean, Jason kind of touched on it. There's some guys in the second round that I really like, and one that I would highlight right off the rip that I really like, and I'm kind of hoping my Browns will pull the card for him in that 39th slot, is Chris Bell, the wide receiver out of Louisville. Size, speed, he's got all those intangibles. He's injured right now, so you've got to, you know, he's got to get healthy. But when I watch him on film, man, I like him as a prospect a lot. And so I think that's a guy that, you know, really could be sort of an underrated guy that in that second round where they ought to be looking. In terms of, you know, they're talking a lot about him. I really do like Monroe Freeling a lot. I think, again, it's just experience. He's going to be – I see a lot of Joe Thomas there. He just doesn't have the time on the field yet. But, man, he's a guy that if you're projecting – If somebody like the Browns are in the top 10 projected him in this draft, I wouldn't get angry about it. As a fan, I'd have to prepare myself for the idea that he's going to struggle as a rookie.
Fun fact, Chris, I have the Browns taking him at 6 in the mock, which I think is a mistake. You like the guy that much, trade back, but I see them staying there and taking him.
I mean, using the Browns, I think the Browns are going to try to trade back. I think there's a lot of teams are going to be trying to trade back. I just don't know how that's going to work out for most of those teams. There's probably one good, you know, trade back scenario in the top 10. And then after that, it's probably not likely.
It's whoever deals with the Cowboys. Cowboys want to come up to get one of these defensive studs.
And what about, you know, I mean – don't think that we're not necessarily, you know, done with that. You know, what we don't know, teams like the Giants now, right? What are they valuing? What are they after? Would the Giants potentially say, hey, Cleveland, we want your 6. Here's our 10 and next year's 1. We want to get up for somebody else that we believe in. Would the Giants look to do something like that? So, don't just say Cowboys. There are other teams that, you know, that might be willing to do some stuff. And if you're somebody like the Browns and the Giants were like, listen, we want to get up again to get back to back because we got guys that we want, you know, do they would, I mean, if you're the Browns, you say yes to that in a second. You drop back to 10, you get the tackle, you get next year's one out of the Giants, and you go. I'm just saying there's some other ones that could happen, but I don't know that it'll really end up being more than one. We historically never see more than one big, you know, trade down, if you will, that typically manifests itself on draft night. So Freeling's a guy I really like. I'll tell you what, a guy, and again, I like Finneau. If they went Tate, I'd be thrilled with it. At 24, a guy like Blake Miller out of Clemson, I think he's a plug and play for 10 years guy. He's got high IQ. He's got physicality. He's played a lot of football. You know, I really like Miller, that you could get later in the first round. And be very comfortable with him at left tackle. And maybe that's where they need to go. I hate the idea of a guy like Caden Proctor. I know he's an athletic freak, but I swear to God, I'm telling you, it's not the Alabama tackle thing. It's my concern with him is the weight.
Started, I mean, a four, guy that almost was 400.
Yeah, there was talk that he was over 400 last year.
Yeah. When he got when they got to camp right before the season started, I believe he checked in at 390, and I think it went up before it went down.
Wow.
And to your point about the Utah tackles, Finneau has shown that he's got more strength than what's his name? Lemieux, or however you pronounce it. I don't know how to pronounce it, but you can add. You got to have guys that I got to keep feeding, and I got to put on creatine, and I got to get them in the weight room, and I got to keep feeding them to get to 330. Then a guy I got to fight to get to 330. Exactly. I would rather fight to get them up to 330, better on the joints, better on the mobility on the edge. I'm much more comfortable with that than a guy like Proctor, who is a behemoth of a man. And clearly, you know, weight is going to be a struggle. I saw our right tackle from Ohio State a couple weeks ago. Remind me, what's his name?
Juwan Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jones.
Jones, Juwan Jones. Yeah. I tell you what, I saw him a couple weeks ago in person. He looked great. He's lost weight. He's not as heavy as he was even last year. And that's pretty impressive when you're coming off a knee injury where you're not able to run and do other stuff. He was svelte. For him, he was svelte. I could see it. So, you know, hopefully that means something for Dwan. So, you know, there's a bunch of guys out there that I think, you know, can really be difference makers. You talked about safety earlier. I really do like McNeil Warren. I watched him at Toledo. God, he's so rangy and wiry. You know, his speed is outstanding. He's going to be a bottom of the draft guy that I think teams are going to target. But, you know, there's a bunch of I think after that first, you know, six or seven, I think it comes down to, I think the proper strategy is you need to trust your board and you need to draft the best player available after that. Let's even say the top 10. You even in the first round, you better be taking playmakers and trust your board and just draft it. I don't care what position they are. You know, if you've, you know, I say it with like the Giants with Jeremiah Love. Like if you've got Scataboo, but Love is, he's a much better prospect. You know, you take him. The Browns are going to face that. You got Judkins. If Love falls to them at six, do they take him? If he's number one on their board left, do they take him? Do they put him and Judkins together and say, okay, we're doing this again, the two running back thing? I mean, maybe. I don't know.
That is possible. By the way, what you speculated about here, the Giants possibly trading next year's first-round pick to the Browns in order to move to six. All I can say is there would be amazing, amazing irony if the ghost of Bobby Bethard was to seize their draft room that night in the way that you're suggesting, Chris. That would be one last thing for him to do for the Redskins, I suppose, if he was to execute a trade like that for the Giants. But a bunch of interesting points that you made there that I agree with. And I want to get yours, Jason, your thoughts on the draft yet that we've not yet gotten to as well.
Okay. So just trying to go overall here, and then I'm going to hit you with some names. Mm-hmm. Again, the key here is playmakers or starters or development guys. Mm-hmm. This is not a draft to look at and say everybody we're going to draft in the top 100 are projected to be starters and cornerstones of this franchise. However, you could have guys that become that. You can have guys that are just great starters forever. There's ways to build a winning roster all over the board here. As far as the love thing, it's not a rule, but like, Love is a better, more complete prospect than Judkins, but I still think that Judkins looks like he's going to be one of those top 10 guys in the league. And are we just gonna, are we going Mac and Biner again if they do that? So I'm not saying no. It'd be interesting if they did that. We talked about the guard from Penn State. I think that's a name that's going to go a lot higher than we think.
By the way, I just want to say about him. Yeah.
He's going to be a Steeler. He's going to be a Steeler. You watch.
He feels like a Steeler, doesn't he?
He's going to the Ravens. He is this year's answer to who are the league general managers going to annoy us by letting slip to the Ravens? It's him. He's going to be the guy that slips to the Ravens. And again, a front office that was born on third base and thinks they hit a triple year after year after year by letting guys slide to them. That's the answer right there. I'm sorry. Proceed, Jason.
Okay. Now, I know most of what we're talking about is first round. And I'm just going to mention, I'll tease it so people will go to the guide to get the rest of it. Offensive line, specifically, like if you're not falling in love with somebody at the top, right? Or you have a team that's picking in the latter third of the first round, or you're at the top of the second and you want to jump back in. I'm really coming back around to Max Iheanacho from Arizona State. You're not going to take him in the top 10, but that's a guy that, again, like Blake Miller, I think he could just go in and just be good. Like, not good like we need to be better, but good like maybe that's just a position you're not worried about for a little while. Mm-hmm. And that could be very interesting, especially in that range. Circling back to the pass rushers, I think at the top between Bailey, Reese, even though he's not an edge, Sony Styles, and then Reuben Bain, I think each one of those is what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
If you want a hand in the dirt, prototypical defensive end, is Bailey. And Bailey, you know what you're getting right now. You know he's going to be your one. Arvell Reese, you're banking on upside and flexibility and ability to play him in multiple places. Sonny Styles is just a freak, and you just don't see players like that. And then with Bain, I'm sorry, but this comes back to Chris's point about analytics versus the tape. I don't know how you can put on the tape with Reuben Bain and then come away with that going, yeah, but he's got short arms. Are you serious?
Right.
Like, and that's, again, the problem is it's the Jeremiah Smith thing. It's comparing these edge rushers to what Myles Garrett is. We can't do that in this draft. Wide receiver, I'm glad Chris brought up Chris Bell. I don't have him going there. But that's one of them guys that when you get into the mid-20s and you start looking at receiver, this is why yesterday, long before the Dexter Lawrence trade went to Cincinnati, there was a rumor, I don't know if you guys caught this, that was floated by Dogs by Nature, which I wouldn't trust for anything.
That's your first mistake. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So then I'm like, okay, but everybody's talking about this. Let me reach out to some people. And I had it confirmed by three different sources that yes, that's a possibility, but it was going to be Dexter Lawrence to Cleveland for 39. No.
Yeah.
You make trades. Don't trade away 39. And if you're anybody that needs offensive help in the top half of the second, don't trade that second pick.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of receivers in there. I wouldn't be shocked if defensive tackle slides, not because of anything wrong with the tackles, but because other positions get prioritized.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, what, four at the top? Caden McDonald, Caleb Banks, Lee Hunter, Peter Woods.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting those guys in the top of the second, that's a home run.
Right.
With those guys. And I don't like all of them equally, but I do like
them. If you need a tackle this year, you got concerns if that was where you had your biggest needs. And I think that's what drove Cincinnati, right? I mean, they got just destroyed up the middle last year. And they're not playing for the future. I mean, I think that's where some of the misunderstanding of that trade yesterday. People are like, "What are the Bengals? That's a lot to give up for a guy who's getting, you know, and they got to pay him." I do question the paying thing. I don't know how Mike Brown's doing that.
Right.
But I will say this. The Bengals think they're playing for now. They've got Burrow. They've got Chase. They've got Higgins. Like, they're not playing. They're not trying to get ready for 2-3 years from now. They're plugging a hole. They think they're plugging a hole by giving away number 10, the 10th pick, right now. Because they know their Super Bowl window is open now.
Great. Stars and scrubs. Good luck with that.
Only concern with this is it's the inverse of what Cleveland is without the mentality of believing that they're that close. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody said months ago, Cleveland's just draft offense. That's all they need because defense is fine.
Yeah.
It's the inverse with Cincinnati. I don't think they're one interior defensive lineman away from being ready to compete because that defense is awful.
Well, they still their offensive line is still ass. So, and again, you know, to say that Chase Brown is a league average running back is probably kind. So that's another spot where they could upgrade. So, I mean, that's just the thing where now, again, I've always said they lost to the greatest Stars and Scrubs team of all time in the Super Bowl, the Rams. The Rams didn't do it with depth. They did it by hitting you with star power and just hoping that the rest of the players didn't cost them the game. So, I mean, maybe the Bengals looked at that. Maybe Mike Brown was like, I can do it that way. I can be, in his case, it's being cheap, not trading away all his future considerations like the Rams do.
And but, I can't confirm if this is accurate, but I did read somewhere before we got started they gave him they extended the existing contract and paid him $28 million.
Okay.
For whatever that's worth. But man, my reaction to that trade was what Chris is referring to. I was like, this is ridiculous. And the reason is perception of value, and it's Cincinnati, who doesn't want to pay anybody, and this guy asked for a trade to make more money. So that was the confusing part there. Rick, would you mind if I promote you real quick?
Go ahead, buddy.
Something that hopefully will move, get more people to check out the draft guide?
Sure. I'm all ears.
I was in my full, like, Dane Brugler mode this year. Like, I did over 500 players. And as you alluded to earlier, there is a section in the draft guide that will have players I have concerns with.
Mm-hmm.
That's me being real polite.
Sure.
So I'm gonna give them one, and then say the rest of it you got to come check the guide, and you will want to because this is just the tip of the iceberg. I don't think either of you.
I want two, Utah, two.
So the first thing is, and I wrote an article on this, Diego Pavia clearly did not get the Shedeur Sanders memo.
No.
And while he keeps claiming to be the best quarterback in this draft, my hot take is I think it's more likely he goes undrafted than he goes in the first 2 days.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And I don't think he did himself any favors with the most recent rumor. Have you guys heard the most recent rumor about him? That he hired Clavicular to be his life coach? I don't think that's going to help him at all.
Well, he was also getting advice from Johnny Manziel, of all people. So that's
he's a poor man's Johnny Manziel at the pro level.
He's not even in my top 10 quarterbacks. He's not getting drafted.
No, he's not. No, he's awful.
I have, get this, I have Diego Pavia after Tyler Van Dyke of SMU.
Okay.
And one spot ahead of Caden Salter at Colorado. And I don't need to tell you how bad he was.
Yeah.
Caden, when I heard, I didn't even go to the pro day. Because when I looked at the list, I said, Colorado doesn't have anybody that's getting drafted. Right. And then I looked at it and said, Caden Salter has the nerve to even go?
Yeah.
So Pavia is bad. But here's where it gets interesting. Pavia is late. Like, that's not a shock to anybody. Right. Here's the thing, though. I have, if I'm not mistaken, at least a couple. One, two, three, four, five. At least five guys, six guys that many people think will go in the top 50 that I think have huge question marks, large concerns. And I'll say that one of them is a receiver that most football fans are excited about. And I wouldn't draft him with somebody else.
I want two. Throw two names out. Give me two.
Oh, you
names.
Want that one? Hear okay.
Them. Give me two. Give me two guys that you say are going to be the busts. Give them to me. I love it.
All right.
Doesn't have to be the other
real big one before we get into like the rest of the list is Casey Concepcion.
Yep.
I don't want Casey Concepcion at all. If he told me to give him the fourth or fifth round, I'd take a flyer.
Me neither.
If he goes to 24, let me quote you the Elaine Benes line from Seinfeld. And I laughed and I laughed.
And that one I keep seeing a lot, that they go tackle early and then they just take whoever they like the most, and it's probably between Omar Cooper Jr. and Casey Concepcion. If it's Omar Cooper, love it as much as I would if it were Tate.
Could be Boston, Washington. Yeah, could I got Boston going in that spot. So, but you'd rather take Tate.
We can keep going because I don't love Boston either.
Look, if you're them, you'd rather to have Tate at six. And then go lineman later on. But this is the Browns. I don't think logic enters into it.
And just to kind of bring it full circle with them, this is why everything I've done for the last couple of weeks is Tate or trade back from six.
Yeah.
Because as Chris was alluding to, if we're looking at guys that maybe aren't Joe Thomas, right, but you have a plan, and hopefully they have a coach now that cares about development, at least that's what he keeps saying. Freeling's a great prospect. He's just not ready right away, right?
Right.
But then you've got the two Utah guys, if I'm off on that. Right. And then you've got names like Iheanacho that I mentioned, Blake Miller that Chris mentioned, and then another guy who I don't think is a left tackle, but I just keep coming back to him. I swear, if he was there in the third round, it's almost worth taking him just because I think of how good he's going to be. As opposed to how good he is now, is the kid with the flowing locks, Jennings Dunker at Iowa. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's my point, is like you have to decide like what's more important.
Yeah, because he's a guard.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He can play right tackle. He's not a left tackle ever. But if he went into right guard, is he not fitting your Joel Bitonio analogy? That's a guy you can slide in at guard, and he's probably there for 10 years.
I was going to say, the Browns need help at every spot on the line. Every spot on the line. They need to be filling out that entire offensive line. Now we're fine at this position. No, they're not.
I've got to be clear. If the Browns use three of their first four picks on offensive line, I'll be a happy boy.
You should be.
If they went and took Fanoe, and then they took Miller, and then in the third they took Jennings, I will sit there and stand on top of the table and say, thank God, because now we've drafted depth all over the place, and now you win in the damn trenches. It's not the way we started off today, it's not that hard.
Right.
You know what's funny about that I'll roll with that, right? We're just gonna punt on receiver completely early. And if they go and get those three guys at offensive line, I am also over the moon because I can make an argument for probably two or three other receivers that they could still look at in the fourth round, in the fifth round, that would still be better than what they have.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. And so there's so many different ways that they can go. And again, as Jason said, you want to check out 2026 Pro Football Draftology, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. Bigger than ever this year with Jason's expanded player rankings on there, 26 pages of draft and non-draft goodness, a little bit of a general preview for the 2026 season, a little bit of college coverage in there as well, a little bit of an early look at next year's NFL draft, a little bit of a preview from a fantasy perspective, all that and much, much more. We've got a game in there, a play-along game that you can participate with as you're watching the NFL draft. FDH contributor Bob Benick, my great friend, coming up with that one there, which we much appreciate. That's in the guide. That's all available there, and we will be relying on the guide heavily Thursday night for the second year in a row in real time, covering the NFL draft with our coast-to-coast extravaganza here, a host of Lounge contributors coast-to-coast, the two folks here. I look forward to, I think we can probably get a pop-in from each of these guys if everything works out, and we will have a bunch of others. Certainly Derek Allen is in for this thus far, Ben Chu, Russ Cohen, Joe Stazak, Bob Glassman. It's going to be a lot of fun, and so it will be great enjoyment here going through that in real time. And then, of course, circling back next weekend, doing a recap taping. Just as we go back to 2012 doing the previews here, and until last year, that was all we've been able to do with going live last year. Last year being a throwback to 2005 to 2009, doing the live shows at the station. The 2005 draft is actually the first broadcast that Jason and I were both a part of at the same time here. And then doing the recap of the draft next weekend, circulating back around with the winners and losers and all of that. But again, may I say that when we're talking about the winners of the draft, certainly anybody that gets to hear this panel can count themselves among the winners of this year's NFL draft, as we demonstrated with this segment here, as we will do subsequently during this draft season here. So, Chris, Jason, I think this is the best combo in the business that we have doing this. Can't thank you guys enough. Really appreciate it. Look forward to hopefully getting a chance to talk to each of you guys on draft night here, and certainly when we do our recap next weekend. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1920.